Good morning, everyone. I wonder, have you ever struggled to make yourself understood? Perhaps on holiday abroad, clutching your phrase book, you've cobbled together what you thought was a sentence in Spanish or Italian, only to see a look of utter bewilderment creep across the face of the shopkeeper or some unfortunate local. Maybe you've chosen the wrong words, or got them in the wrong order or grammatical form. But even when words are correct, they can still be misunderstood. You may be familiar with the Two Ronnies fork handle sketch, in which a handyman comes into a hardware shop wanting a new handle for his garden fork and is offered four wax candles by the shopkeeper. And the whole sketch draws on the humour which can arise when people misunderstand one another. But of course, it's not always funny, is it? Failure to communicate effectively and breakdowns in understanding can cause problems in all areas, from personal relationships to world affairs, as we're seeing only too clearly at the moment, alas. Last year, the science fiction film Arrival took this one step further to explore the concept of communication barriers between humans and aliens. The central character in the film, Louise Banks, is a linguistics professor who's recruited by the United States Army following the appearance of a series of mysterious alien spacecraft. Now, Banks' job is to establish contact with the aliens, and they're on board the craft, obviously, and to make sense of their bizarre language, which turns out to be written using a series of complex circles with no particular word order. And as in all good science fiction films, the survival of the human race is at stake. And it swiftly becomes evident that everything hinges on Banks's ability not only to understand, but also to make herself understood as she engages with this strange species. No pressure there, then. The opening of John's Gospel that we've just heard takes us one step further still. Imagine, if you will, a scenario where there is nothing. No time, no space, no light, no American army, no aliens, nothing. Difficult, isn't it? The human race hasn't, of course, even come into existence at this point, and yet somehow its survival is still the key issue. And once again, it all hinges on communication, this time between God and humankind. But here, there is only one word. And everything that needs to be said, everything that needs to be understood, is summed up in that word. But unlike any other word, it has never been spoken or written because it was always there. There was never total silence. There was never a blank page. So, what do we know about this word? First of all, we see that the word has power to create. So Jesus, the word, is the agent of creation. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. And John is really emphatic about this. He says it both ways. He makes his point positively and in negative terms too, just to make sure that we get it. So we know that Jesus is distinct from God the Father, the Creator. Otherwise, John couldn't have said that he was with God. But paradoxically, Jesus is also one and the same as God. And therefore, he was right there when it all began in Genesis chapter 1 as well. I don't know if you've ever looked at compared the opening of the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's an interesting exercise. Genesis, of course, begins in the beginning, God created. And John begins, in the beginning was the Word. So the link between Jesus and the whole process of creation, whenever and however that happened, is undeniable. In him was life. He is the creative word. If we were to look at Genesis 1 in more detail, which we're not today, but were you to do that, you would see that the world is brought into being as God speaks. His words, "let there be," have creative power. And he speaks and something happens. And by speaking, he also gives names to what he's made and blesses it. And then he steps back, reflects, and sees that it is good. I think it's important to remember here that we're all made in God's image. And because he is a creative God, every one of us is creative too. We may not recognize this in ourselves. If I had a pound for every person I'd met who told me they were not creative, I'd be a very wealthy woman. But I don't believe them. I'd argue that every one of us is creative and that creativity takes very many forms. And that if we deny our own creativity, we're denying something God wants to realize in us, some part of him within us. I confess that this passage from John's Gospel is one of my absolute favourites in the Bible. And when I hear it read at Christmas or any other time of the year, it makes my spine tingle. It speaks to me of eternity, of infinity, of God's unimaginable vastness. And it also speaks to me of his grace and truth, his mind and heart supremely expressed in Jesus. It captures the mystery by which the one who set the world in motion, who flung stars into space, could stretch out his hand and say to me and to you, "I love you." I think this passage is all about a perfect message, perfectly communicated. And that's why Jesus is described as the Word. As the preacher and scholar Matthew Henry said, "The plainest reason why the Son of God is called the Word seems to be that just as our words explain our minds to others, so was the Son of God sent in order to reveal his Father's mind to the world." And you don't need to be a linguistics professor to understand that. So secondly, we see that the Word has power to reveal. As I understand it, God's revealed himself to us, his existence, if you like, in three particular ways: through the world, in other words, creation, through his written word, the Bible, with its many different types of writing, and through the word made flesh, Jesus. And in verse 18, John says, "No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known." So what has Jesus told us about God? That he is glorious, that he is gracious, that he is truth. Jesus is described as the true light. He's come to illuminate what is in darkness, what isn't seen or understood. So some of you may know that I facilitate writing for wellbeing groups. And I've just finished a 10-week program with some women whose lives have been far from straightforward. During the sessions, I saw at first hand the power of writing to reveal. Here's an example. In one exercise, we focused on how people were feeling physically at the time. And through the writing, one participant realized that a strong and potentially negative emotion was affecting her body. "I hadn't realized how much anger I was carrying," she said. And we followed that on with another exercise, which involved each participant focusing on a chosen emotion and exploring their relationship with it and its impact on their life. The same woman, choosing to focus on anger, realized afterwards that her writing had somehow helped her to see what she called a bigger picture. By the end of the session, she'd identified someone she could approach to help her manage that emotion better. Our written words can be revealing. So let's look at another way in which the word is powerful. In our second reading, Matthew describes Jesus' encounter with a centurion. And here we witness the fact that the word has power to heal. So what do we know about this man who comes to Jesus? Well, for a start, he's a Gentile and a man of some status. He's a centurion in the hated occupying Roman army. And yet he is also a man capable of both humility and empathy. He approaches Jesus, a Jew and his social inferior, recognizing him as the one who can help. And then he acknowledges the problem before Jesus. His servant is paralyzed and suffering terribly. And finally, he expresses a measure of faith which leaves Jesus utterly astonished. He not only asserts his own unworthiness to receive Jesus in his house, but he also believes that Jesus can heal the servant from a distance. As a military officer, he knows the power of a command. A couple of weeks ago, Mark and I went to see the parade in Dorking High Street, the farewell parade for Headley Court. We were rather late, true to form, and ended up shooting up the high street to Pitbrook, where all the troops were gathered for an inspection, whatever else, for the ceremony there. The commanding officer, when everything had been done and all the inspections were complete, went up to the Countess of Wessex, who was the royal for that occasion, and asked her permission to release the troops, which she duly gave. And then he turned round to the troops lined up in front of him and bellowed, "Squad will advance, left turn," to which every person, to a woman and a man, turned to their left and prepared to advance. So the power of a word, the power of a command. But this is in a different league altogether, isn't it? This commanding officer is expecting a word to lead to a miracle. There are many other people in Matthew's gospel who come to Jesus in faith asking for healing. And there's Jairus, you may remember. There was the man with leprosy, the woman with a hemorrhage, the blind men. But in all these cases, Jesus was present and had physical contact with those that he healed. But here, the centurion believes that Jesus' word is enough. His physical presence, his touch isn't necessary. Just the word, that's where the healing power lies. So Jesus speaks, and that word, that power is released. But what does all this mean for us? I wonder how we have experienced the power of words, spoken and written, in our own journey of faith. If we're Christians, then at some stage we have heard and responded to the magnetic call of Jesus to faith and discipleship. Follow me. But that might have been the culmination of days, weeks, months, even years of listening to sermons, talks, overheard conversations, of reading the Bible and other books or articles, of discussing with other people who believe or want to believe. And then along the way, I wonder how words have helped to spark or nurture or maybe rekindle your faith. Again, there will have been sermons, no doubt, that have challenged and encouraged you. There'll have been words of encouragement probably from other Christians, a text, a card, a conversation over coffee, a whispered prayer. And of course, there are the words that we've read, the wisdom and guidance that we may have found in the Bible, and the glimpses of truth that God gives us in many other writings too. But I wonder if you've ever considered whether your own writing might actually be a way of tapping into God's power, a potential source, if you like, of truth and his revealing, healing power. If God speaks to us through the Bible and through other people's words, then why not through our own written words? It's my firm belief that writing for ourselves, not to impress other people, can be immensely helpful, healing, liberating, and revealing. This is a kind of writing which doesn't focus on spelling, on elaborate literary devices, on producing something of artistic merit. This is very different. It's private writing, unless we choose to share it. It's writing to learn rather than learning to write, whatever we may think that means. And there's something, I think, about the writing process which is very distinct from speaking. I was talking to somebody earlier about the important, who has a very, in her quiet times with God, has a lot of kind of dialogue and discussion, lives on her own, and can actually use talking without worrying about anybody else hearing it out loud to God, and finds that immensely helpful and hears from God in that way. And that's a fantastic thing. Writing can offer something slightly different, I think, that putting our thoughts onto paper can actually help us to find focus and clarity and order. It can release frustration, anxiety, and pain without the added concern of how those emotions will be received by a listener. It can give insights and understanding and reveal patterns and open up fresh perspectives. And the page is patient and permanent unless you choose to destroy it. So one can actually record something and then spend time reflecting and looking at it, whereas spoken words are there and then they're gone, aren't they, very often, unless we choose to record them. So writing allows time for rereading, reflecting, revising, responding. And it permits us, I think, to explore and experiment safely. It invites us to create and celebrate. It can add, I think, a new dimension to our prayer times, and it is always present, day or night. So this morning after the service, there's an opportunity to try out some different writing activities, and I'd really encourage you to stay if you can. There's something for everybody, and the important thing is there's no pressure, and there are no rules, and there are no expectations. And I think most of the activities are self-explanatory, but I'll be there to explain anything that isn't clear, or just if you'd like to talk about your writing at all. And I'd encourage you, if you take part, to respect other people's privacy, not peer over their shoulder and say, what have you done? Obviously, they may want to share it with you. Please be ready to listen if someone does. But my hope and prayer is that this morning will open up something new for everybody, and that in the days to come, you will experience God's creative, revealing, healing power at work in your life through the channel of your own writing. Thank you.